Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20. The Rainy Season and Autumn. Text number, it's on the board, 19. Na. Ra Raja. Udupa. Chana. Swa. Joshna. Rajitai. Ganai. Aham Matya Basitaya Swa Bhasa Purusha Yata Narara Jodupashchana Svajoshna Rajitarganai Ahamatya Bhasitaya Subhasa Purusho Yatha Nararaja did not shine forth. Udupa the moon. Chana covered. Svajoshna, by its own light. Rajitai, which are illuminated. Kanai, by the clouds. Ahamatya, by false ego. Vasitaya, which is illuminated. Svabhasa, by his own luster. Purusha, the living entity. Yatha, as. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illuminated by the moon's rays. Similarly, living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illuminated by the consciousness of the pure soul. So what did I just read? Louder.
The human being, just as the moon is covered by the clouds, which are illuminated by the light of the moon, the human being also their false ego covers the self, which is illuminated by the super soul. By the
close, pretty close. Read it again. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illuminated by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being of material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illuminated by the consciousness of the pure soul. Purport. The analogy given here is excellent. During the rainy season, we cannot see the moon in the sky because the moon is covered by clouds. These clouds, however, are radiant with the glow of the moon's own rays. Similarly, in our conditioned material existence, we cannot directly perceive the soul because our consciousness is covered by the false ego, which is the false identification with the material world and the material body. Yet it is the soul's own consciousness that illuminates the false ego. As the Gita describes, the energy of the soul is consciousness. And when this consciousness manifests through the screen of false ego that appears as dull material consciousness, in which there is no direct vision of the soul or God. In the material world, even great philosophers ultimately resort to hazy ambiguities when speaking about the absolute truth. Just as a cloudy sky manifests only in a dull and indirect way the iridescent light of the moon. In material life, our false ego is often enthusiastic, hopeful, and apparently aware of various material affairs, and such consciousness encourages us to push on in material existence. But in truth, we are merely experiencing the dull reflection of our original pure consciousness, which is Krishna consciousness, direct perception of the soul and God, not realizing that the false ego merely hampers and dulls our real spiritual consciousness, which is fully enlightened and blissful. We mistakenly think that material consciousness is full of knowledge and happiness. This is comparable to thinking that the luminous clouds are lighting up the night sky, which in fact is the moonshine that illuminates the sky, and the clouds that merely dull and hamper the moonshine. The clouds appear luminous because they are filtering and impeding the brilliant rays of the moon. Similarly, at times, material consciousness appears pleasurable or enlightened because it is screening or filtering the original blissful and enlightened consciousness coming directly from the soul. We can understand the ingenious analogy given in this verse. We can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. Sri Prabhupada's purport. Anyhow, real quick. At night, by the grace of the moonlight, the clouds in the sky can be seen moving. Yet the moon itself also appears to be moving, just as a living being appears to be moving because of false identification with matter. At night in the rainy season, the moving clouds reflecting the moonlight make the moon appear to be moving. This is called illusion. The spirit soul of the living being is the root of all material, of all activities in the material body. But because of illusion, the spirit soul appears covered by the gross and subtle material bodies. Thus covered, the conditioned soul identifies with the material body, becomes subject to the sense of false ego. This false ego obliges the living being to consider his material body to be himself, the offspring of the body to be his children, and the land of the birth of the body to be an object of worship. Thus the living being's conception of nationalism is another type of ignorance. Because of ignorance, the living being identifies himself with the land of his birth and moves with the misconceptions of national ideas. In fact, however, a living being does not belong to any nation or species of life. He has nothing to do with the material body, as the moon has nothing to do with the moving clouds. The moon is far away from the clouds and is fixed in its own orbit. But illusion presents a scene in which the moon appears to be moving. A living being should not float with a misconception of the temporary body. He must always know within himself to be transcendental to the bodily identity. This is the path of knowledge, and complete knowledge fixes a living being in the orbit of spiritual activities. The spiritual living force is always active by nature. By illusion, his activities are wrongly directed in relation with the body. But in the liberated condition of complete knowledge, his activities are conducted in spiritual devotion. Liberation does not mean stopping activities. It means being purified of illusory activities and becoming transcendental to relations with the gross and subtle bodies. Maham Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Budai Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Desatarna. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Yata prakashaya ekam krishnam lokimimam ravi shedra shetri tata krishnam prakashayati bharata. When, however, one is enlightened, actually, this one is, just like the sun alone illuminates all the universe, so the living entity, one within the body, illuminates the entire body by consciousness. Should be quite easy to understand, but it's actually quite difficult if we don't want to understand it. In other words, as Prabhupada once said in one lecture in Durban, he was giving a lecture and explaining about the transmigration of the soul. And there he explained that it is a science. One person objected, saying, Swamiji, how can you declare that transmigration of the soul is a science, it is a Hindu dogma? And Prabhupada countered by saying, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Deno sminita dehe komarnyovanam jara tata dahantara praptir diryas tatra namuyati. That the embodied soul is continually passing in a body, which is going from boyhood to youth to old age. So similarly, the soul will enter into another body at the time of death. A self-realized soul is not bewildered by all these changes. In other words, when Krishna was speaking 5,000 years ago to Arjuna, he did not declare in the Bhagavad Gita, my dear Arjuna, now I'm going to speak to you the Bhagavad Gita, which is a Hindu philosophy. Because after all, I'm a Hindu god, and you're a Hindu. So naturally we'll exchange ideas on Hindu philosophy. So according to Hindu philosophy, you have a body, all Hindus have bodies that change. And unfortunately for Hindus, they have to leave their body at the time of death. But don't worry, because you're a Hindu, you'll get another body at the, leaving your body. Hindus aren't bewildered by these changes. If we take Bhagavad Gita as a universal philosophy, then we have to look and see if everyone's body is not changing. And I think most of us, sane people, will agree that our bodies are changing. Of course, yesterday I met one declared atheist. He even spelled out atheism to me. So I showed him the picture of the changing bodies. And I said, and he said, no, my body is exactly the same. And so I pointed out the little baby body. I said, your body is exactly the same as that right now? And he just, I guess in the colloquial, he freaked out. He started to babble all kinds of things, declaring it is exactly the same. Realizing how foolish he was, he got even more disturbed. And he started, I'm an atheist. A-T-H-E-I-S-T. I'm an atheist. I don't believe exactly the same body. He just kept on ranting and then ran away. So such is the rational minds of the atheists. That your poor mother, if she had your body right now in her womb, she'd probably feel a little bit more uncomfortable. But it's exactly the same body, according to him. Not one hair difference. No, the fact is that everyone, whether they believe it or not, whether an atheist or a Hindu or a Christian, a Buddhist, whatever, a man, woman, dog, cat, plant, everyone has a body that's changing. And whether we're, our false ego bewilders us or not, the fact is that there's some living person within the body who's aware of all these changes. Just as we were aware of having a little baby body, so now we're aware of having this body. But the person who's aware is exactly the same, unless you have many persons within your body. But that's another problem. But the fact is that our body is different, but we ourselves, we realize we have different bodies because we're the same person. So this is 100% proof, objective, rational, clinically discernible proof, we being the experimenter, that we're eternal. That should, of course, raise great joy and glee in everyone to find out that they're eternal, but it doesn't, for most people, doesn't make any sense to them. Therefore, to try to complicate things by more and more philosophy, when one simply can't understand the difference between themselves and the body, is a waste of time. It's futile. If one can't understand that they're alive and conscious, and that the body is unconscious, and that they're conscious of this body, and the body's not conscious of them. If you ask your hand, what do you think of the self within the body, you probably won't get a very elaborate answer. But if you ask yourself, what do you think of the hand? Oh, looks pretty good. Five fingers, still there. Not bad. Could be worse. So we ourselves are conscious of the body, but the body, being unconscious, is not conscious of ourselves. We ourselves are not changing, but the body is changing. So this is called knowledge. And anything which is outside this knowledge, it must be considered to be ignorance. And on that basis, everything else follows. Not everything, but a good deal of things follow. And without that, nothing makes any sense. Nothing in our philosophy, and nothing in any philosophy actually makes any sense without understanding these basic principles. Therefore, if we look at Prabhupada's teachings, his preaching, his classes, he would always generally begin, especially when I first joined in 1968, we didn't have internet, we didn't have hardly anything. We didn't even have tape recorders, practically speaking. It was very rare that anyone had a tape recorder. They were huge machines. Therefore, the only way we heard about Prabhupada's lectures was that someone would call up on a telephone, which was pretty rare also. People didn't use telephone like they did now. It was very expensive to find out what Prabhupada would say. And invariably, we hear that the newest lecture that Prabhupada gave, Prabhupada was explaining that we're not this body. Indeed, the first month I spent in Krishna consciousness, happened to be Burjan Prabhu, was giving the lecture every day because he was the senior devotee in the temple. He had joined a month before I did. So being a senior devotee, he got the 3 times a week at the University of Buffalo, he'd read Dr. Radhakrishna's purport to the Bhagavad Gita sloka 2.14. And that's all he read, because that's all we had. We had no Bhagavad Gita at that time. We only had Dr. Radhakrishna's purport to that one verse. And it was, Deinosmi nita dehe kamaram yovanam jara tata dahantara pravtir dhiryas tatra namuyati. So after a month of hearing that, I was wondering if there was anything else to the philosophy. Because before he even started the lecture, I already knew what he was going to say. It wasn't a big audience. There was like 2 or 3 of us attending the lectures. And finally, at the end of the month, I thought, wow, that's fantastic. I'm not the body. That's a great verse. So that verse is a very important verse. And when we do realize that we're not the body, then Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakankshiti Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Man Bhaktim Lavate Param. Then we'll actually become joyful. If we're not joyful, it's because we haven't fully realized that we're not the body. Therefore, we think we have so many problems. But actually, we don't have any problem. It's the body that has problems. And because we're not the body, we actually have no problems. And when we try to solve the body's problems, that doesn't solve any of our problems. Because we don't have any of those problems. Unfortunately, because we're in the body and because we identify ourselves with the body, therefore we think we have so many problems. That's our problem. So to get out of that problem, there is the process of yoga. Yoga, Sankhya Yoga Pritag Bala Pravadanti Napandita Ekamap Yastita Samyag Ubhaya Binate Palam. That only the ignorant speak of karma yoga and devotional service as being different from the analytical study of the material world, namely Sankhya. That one who's actually knowledge knows that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. By some kind of yoga system, one can gradually get out of the conception of the body. And that's called liberation. Then there's, what is the symptom? There's no more hankering and there's no more lamentation. Due to our hankering and our lamentation, our identification with these things, therefore we get this false ego, and the false ego happens to be very powerful. That's why we ourselves, the little tiny soul within the body, under the influence of the false ego, and how much intellectually we understand that we're not the body, we cannot actually perceive directly that we're not the body, because the false ego in the material world is more powerful than we are. But when we give up the hankering and lamentation, namely the identification with it, not that it doesn't appear, as it says, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti advat tadvat kama yam pravishanti sarve sa shantim apnoti nakama kami. That a person who's not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled and is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the person who strives to satisfy such desires. In the material world, desires will flow through our minds because that's how the material world is set up. This body is a machine and it works in a gross and subtle way. And on the subtle way, desires automatically arise by a mechanical arrangement, by association. As soon as our eyes associate with something, look around, then immediately some memory will come automatically into our consciousness or into our mind. It's a mechanical arrangement. Of course, by practice, we can cultivate spiritual knowledge also, and therefore by that association we look around, we'll see things in a spiritual perspective rather than a material perspective. That's the beginning of our attempt to become Krishna conscious. Not exactly the beginning, it's the second stage. First stage is to move the body according to higher instructions. Then when the body is moving according to higher instructions, we can start thinking according to higher instructions also. Otherwise, if the body moves according to the lower instructions, our intelligence is automatically carried away. But when the body works according to higher instructions, to that degree, the intelligence and the mind work at a higher platform and therefore can begin to perceive things and conceive things in a spiritual way. Then when we see everything else as spiritual, then our spiritual identity becomes clearer because the false ego diminishes. The influence of material nature gradually goes away. But as long as we're not acting and seeing things spiritually, just like one time I was distributing a book at the University of Texas in Austin to one college student, showing them the changing body. And I was showing the baby body, he had this 15-year-old body, and somehow or another the student caught on and realized for that moment that he wasn't his body. And he became joyful. He said, "Wow, I'm not my body, that's fantastic." So I said, "That's great. Here, take the book and give a donation." And he gave me the book back, shook my hand, said, "I don't need your book, but thank you very much. I'm not this body. That's great." And then ran away. So that's called Maya. So intellectually we may understand for a moment or whatever that we're not the body, but the false ego being under its influence, we're going to again misidentify ourselves with the body. Just as I explained before, that in Krishna Lila, hardly anyone believes Krishna is God. But once in a while, they actually proclaim that Krishna is actually God. Even the gopis declare that he is actually God. The reason why he held up Govardhan Hill for 7 days was not because he didn't really lift the hill. Or Mother Jasoda said, actually, I don't believe it was Krishna who held up the hill. I think it was actually Nanda Maharaj who held up the hill. Because some of the cowherd men, they had sticks and they were trying to help Krishna hold up the hill. But sometimes they declare that actually we know Krishna is God. But they never take it very seriously. Even they think like that. So similarly, even we know we're not this body, we don't take it very seriously. But by the process of yoga, some kind of yoga, gradually the false ego can be diminished and we can understand our actual position as a soul. To understand that we're not the body is not sufficient, just like to understand that we're not the dream at night is not sufficient, we have to wake up and find out who we really are. So that's called Krishna consciousness, which goes beyond even to end our misidentification with this body and realize our eternal position. But as long as we're misidentifying ourselves with this body, then automatically we're going to act in the material concept of life and real devotional service won't begin. Because even our activities as a devotee will be centered around somehow or another, grossly or subtly, trying to help this body or serve the body. In mode of distress, we're trying to end our distress. In the mode of insecurity, we want some security. In the mode of inquisitiveness, we want knowledge how to better manipulate the material world. And in the mode of goodness, in the mode of having knowledge, we want to get out of the material world. So those different positions, according to the Nectar Devotion, only when we come to the platform wanting to get out of the material world can we find out that the way to get out of the material world, the best way, is to get out of material consciousness by becoming Krishna conscious. Therefore, first we have to, when we're acting in Krishna consciousness, we should try to purify our consciousness. We shouldn't worry so much exactly, well, we should worry how we're doing our service, but the most important aspect of our service is our consciousness. So we should be doing it in the Brahma-Buddha stage, namely, without hankering, without lamentation, not worrying about what's going to happen in the future on the basis of my service. Of course, thoughts will always come to the mind. Yoga chalati manasa. Maya is very expert. It's not that she's going to roll over and die all of a sudden because we started to chant Hare Krishna. No, it doesn't work like that. No, while we're engaged in service to Krishna, Maya will always try to allure us by different types of allurements. She's expert at that. She'll try to trick us. So when the thoughts come to our mind, we shouldn't identify ourselves with the thoughts. We should identify ourselves as Krishna's servant. And therefore the thoughts will simply flow through our mind and we won't become attached to them. Just like if you're standing there and a snake starts coming by, then if you rush to grab the snake, it'll bite you. And if you run away from the snake, it'll also bite you. If you simply stand there motionless, the snake will simply go away. Similarly, if we're not disturbed by the thoughts, and especially if we have higher knowledge, we understand that we're not the thoughts, these thoughts have nothing to do with me, the real soul within the body, then they'll simply disappear. And if we become attached to them, then we'll identify ourselves with them and become entangled. And if we become averse to them, we'll also identify with them and become entangled. And what will be the sign that the thoughts no longer are bothering us? The sign will be that we won't see ourselves as having so many friends and enemies in this world. That we'll see everyone as a soul also. It's not that we're the only souls, and that when we discover it, we discover we're the only souls, or we're the supreme soul, or amongst all the jiva souls, we're the best soul because we discovered it. And everyone else is a bad soul. could say I haven't understood. No, we'll see everyone is on the same spiritual platform as being a soul, just like we are. And sometimes by the mercy of Krishna and his representative, some souls understand this and some souls don't. That's all. But everyone is a soul. Everyone is eternal soul. No one has any problem. Everyone is in the same position. Doesn't matter whether they're rich or poor in the material world. This has nothing to do with the actual soul within the body, who's transcendental. So we're very fortunate because we have this opportunity to understand things properly, and understanding things properly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants us to distribute this knowledge to others so they can understand things properly, although we can see it is by free will that one can take to the process by which one can understand one's spiritual identity and ultimately the supreme spiritual identity, or by free will one can remain in the ignorant misidentification of the body, causelessly. When he's distributing books yesterday, somehow or another, Krishna sent me many crazy people. One after another. He sent me some nice people also. Some nice, but a lot of crazy people. Who were very, one boy I was talking to, I asked, what would he study in school? He said, I'm a scientist. Right away I knew he was in trouble. So it didn't matter what I said. The more illogical and reasonable you say, of course you don't spend too much time. But I just showed him the changing body and showed him that the body's changing, you're the same. And he also flipped out, so to speak, and said, this can't be true, I'm a scientist, and ran away. So such is the living entities, how Maya is bewildering everyone. That covering, in other words, mostly when you're talking to people, they don't hear a word you're saying. As soon as you start talking, they're simply listening to their false ego. And every word you're saying is being filtered through their false ego. I'm a Christian, this can't be possible. Whatever he's saying is wrong. Because Jesus Christ died for my sins, so this can't be right. Or I'm a scientist, this has to be wrong or else I'm out of a job, so it can't be right. Or I'm here to enjoy and control, so if he's right, then I'm not the enjoyer and control, so it has to be wrong. So Maya is very expert, and people are very dull. Still, we have to try, at least when we're preaching this philosophy, we have to listen to it, so our false ego is not talking to us also. Take the book or something, because if you take the book, I'll get one more point. If I get one more point, then I'll be glorified in the three zones and the Sankirtan newsletter, and my life will be perfect. Or take the book and give me a donation. I need something to eat. So our false ego shouldn't be. We shouldn't listen to it either. Otherwise, our conversations in the material world are usually between two false egos talking to two conditioned souls. Yeah, thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
If you tell people that they're not the body...
How dare you?
that removes practically everything that they've got to relate to. So it's not perfect. It wouldn't be unusual if we can't give them a positive conception for them to be concerned about that.
Yes, but most probably generally in the beginning never did that. People can't understand that. They can't even understand. It's not that difficult. Most sane people will agree that their body's changing. In spite of all, even the scientists say every 7 years, every cell in your body changes. But the fact is that every moment, everything's changing. Every electron, so to speak, you may believe in that thing, that type of philosophy. Every electron is moving around, so it's different. It's in a different place. And the person who's the observer is always the same observer. We have direct experience with that. So if we're not aware of ourselves, what are we aware of? And if we think we're different all the time, then how is that possible? If there was a different person in your body 10 years ago, then how would you know? Because you weren't there. So the more you get into it and explain it, It's just the only a person who's not sane could not understand that they're not their body. But Maya makes us crazy. So if you can't, even if you explain something higher, if they can't understand that as a basis, they can't understand anything higher. Because after all, if the soul is always changing, so why shouldn't the Supreme Soul also be changing all the time too? Do you agree?
That's what you're saying is correct, but I'm just thinking from the point of view of devotees also who take Krishna consciousness and can understand. We can understand we're not the body. It's not difficult to understand, but then the difficulty is to understand, well, who am I actually? And that's scary, you know what I mean? That's a challenge to actually know who you are.
To find out you're 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary size. It's embarrassing, actually.
Yeah.
We're a lot smaller than we thought we were. And it's hard enough to be a little tiny human being in this world, but not even to be that big.
Or just to be embarrassed by the fact that you can't connect to who you really are. You're just connecting to all of these false things because of conditioning. That's quite embarrassing also. So it can be quite scary for a devotee who hasn't got the positive to hang on to.
Yeah. Oh, Krishna. We don't know Krishna. We think, well, there is Krishna, that boss who's controlling everything, you know, sitting there enjoying with his girlfriend. And I'm out here suffering. He just wants me to give him food all day and worship him and serve him. And my God, you know, doesn't he have enough, you know, opulence? What does he need my little service for? So we may have all kinds of misconceptions. Generally, the main misconception is about Krishna, the big boss. He reminds us of our parents or our boss or a school teacher or someone. We impose all kinds of conceptions upon Krishna. You know, he has all these girls and, you know, why doesn't he let me have one or two, too? Whatever our conception. And he gets 6 meals a day and, you know, why doesn't he give me a few? So we have to understand Krishna, and then naturally when we understand how nice Krishna is, that it's not his fault we're imprisoned in the material world, that we have 100% of the responsibility, then things will change. And as long as we think Krishna is the cause, he's the cause of all causes, I'm innocent, I don't belong here, I don't know why I'm here, I should be in a much nicer place. Then it's very hard to understand. So in the 9th chapter, which is most confidential knowledge, Krishna says he's not to blame. He begins that at the very beginning. It's not his fault we're here. It's only due to our fault. And as soon as we give up our desire to be here, the desire to be in material consciousness, then immediately we're out of material consciousness. It's very hard to give it up. Unless we understand how nice Krishna is and how nice it is to serve him. Service in the material world is not a very high priority for most people. After working all day at the office, they don't come home and ask their wife, "My dear wife, I worked all day, I'm tired, but I really want to know, what kind of service do you have for me today?" People are working to get out of service. So to understand that service is what you're working for, and to serve the Supreme Lord, who doesn't even need your service, that's very hard to understand. And he's not going to give you anything in return either. That's even more hard to understand. He's going to take everything away, get you to serve him 24 hours a day forever, and not give you anything in return. Just some little bit of his appreciation, if he likes you. Anything else? Yes.
Probably we often make a laugh or we make fun of the other things like Hindu or Christians. We think we are better than them. Is this not our fault here?
Well, why do we think we're better than them?
Like we know Krishna and we have higher knowledge than them.
Well, that's true.
So, is this not our fault?
No, that's our real ego. We actually know, we know something about reality. We know something more. Not by, because they have a designation. It's not, we don't have the designation of being this or that. It's just that by Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita and we're listening to him to some degree. Krishna knows everything. It's not that we know everything, but we're proud of Krishna, that he's speaking reality. Lord Jesus Christ, Lord Mohammed, or others were also speaking reality. So there are also those who are listening to them will find out something about reality too. The point is, generally neither we nor anyone else are listening to God in any form. So we have nothing to be proud of. The only thing we have to be proud of is Krishna. We're proud that Krishna is God and that we're trying to become his servant. So that pride is alright when we think about how nice Krishna is. And when other people in other philosophies, they think about their truth, what do they have to be proud of? We worship the boy because he has no face, he has no peacock feather, he has nothing. We worship him anyhow because we're sorry for him. What do they have to, they, what is their conception of the, of reality? If you ask a so-called Christian on the street, what is your conception of the truth? What is their conception? Do you know? No. So they don't. Well, we're not proud because Krishna is kind to us, but we're proud that Krishna is so kind, that we have such a nice Supreme Lord to worship.
Yes. Just now you were saying about the intelligence, when we talk something about say, Krishna consciousness to a person, he may momentarily know that he is not a body, but again the false ego comes and whatever we say gets filtered through that false ego and he gets very selective listening. So I had a small realization in this concept. It's just a matter of getting the new knowledge, and in this case it's not Krishna consciousness. But the same individual, when he goes to, say, for example, university, he learned too many subjects for the first time. But the attitude that he has at that place is very receptive, because he knows that if you do these subjects well, he may get a good job. So here, as if we're like, say, preaching, it's very difficult for them to realize that there is some benefit if you learn it.
Yeah.
In the education system, they are on the same thing. They are learning something new. But they accept with both hands because they see there is something for them.
Yeah. So we try to explain to them, you'll get a little reward. You'll realize you're eternal. You'll become, you'll experience unlimited pleasure forever. You just get a little bit in return. Most people say, well, that's not very interesting. So what we're saying is true. I mean, how many people, if you told them, I'm take this pill, you're going to live for another 100 years. How many people would be very enthusiastic? How much would they pay for the pill? We say, well, here, you pay twice as much, you'll live for another 1,000 years. People would spend everything for it. Or take this book, you're going to live forever. No, I'm not interested. Because they don't believe it, that's all. Because that's called ignorance. We're here, take this pill, you'll be in ecstasy for 24 hours. People, they'll take, you know, they'll buy a pill to be in ecstasy, so-called ecstasy, for 10 minutes. But here, take this book, you'll be in ecstasy forever. Not interested. I guess they don't believe it, that's all. So it's our job to understand it so nicely that at least we believe it.
What should be our attitude when we are giving the book? Let him take the book, or we should try
when we when we're trying to sell a book, yeah. Try and make the person happy. That should be our attitude. Try to get them somehow or another enthusiastic to buy the book. Somehow or another. If you try to explain the whole philosophy from, you know, Dharma Kshetra, Kuru Kshetra, all the way to Yogeshwara Krishna, convince them. I got 2 hours to convince you to fight by the book. No, you have to. Most people, if you just a little, find out what they're interested in and say something that will invoke their interest to buy the book. Yes.
What about, you mentioned that we should not be attached to our desires or averse to certain, the desires, averse. If you could explain, when we have a lusty desire, we say, oh, this is not the sweet ambition. So, is that that?
Oh. Well, certain things it's not bad to be a little averse to, but not that. Here's a beautiful woman, she's walking down the street. Oh, I'd love to get her. No, I hate her. I hate her. And all the day, I hate that woman. I hate that woman. So, that's not a good idea either. That one should see things properly, but neither we should develop hatred or love for anything. We should try to see things in relation to Krishna. There's a soul inside everyone's body. So we should try and see how the material nature is working and how the spiritual nature is working too. And take the spiritual nature as being more important than the material nature. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Krantarai Srimad Bhagavad Gitaam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Lord Jagannath, Lord Baladev, Srimati Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. We'd like to welcome back Lord Jagannath, Lord Baladev, and Srimati Subhadra Devi. Finally made it back to the temple after a long illness. They'll be attending Mangalarti tomorrow.